Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. We are joined today by Derek Perkins, founder of The Drone Farmer, to talk about precision agriculture and innovation in the pandemic. Derek, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So Derek, tell us a little bit about how the Drone Farmer came to be and what your forecast is for this year.
Drone Farmers started about three seasons ago. I come from the industry TV film, so we were using drones a lot for videography. Being in this market, I started to get a lot of requests from various farms, growers, to just do, flyovers of their field, circle the field. And it was kind of at the time when the industry, where a lot of people were selling crops they didn't actually have. So this was one way to prove that you had what you were selling and B, how well you could grow whatever particular type of crop you were growing. So a year or two, that kind of same clients started asking for more plant health type of info, not just visual data. So that is what really kind of started the Drone Farmers, was looking at the equipment that's used on drones for ag and crop management. On the service side, as well as on the education side, what professors were using to train agronomists, what type of equipment they use for phenotyping and things like that. So to set up a business, once I kind of had a grasp of the two levels of equipment that were out there, it kind of helped us center on what direction we were going to establish the Drone Farmers. And so we did that to offer basic services to the growers. That was kind of specific to hemp.
Well, it's interesting too, because you've seen the development of this industry in the United States, specifically as it relates to hemp farming over the last couple of years. And one of the really important parts of all of that is herbicide, pesticide application. Of course, when industrial hemp farming started in the United States, a lot of farmers thought, oh, this is going to be the same as other crops. And then they came to find out that was not the case. And that is kind of where you have found a niche for your business. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's, I think number one thing is weeds. Traditional ag is used to being able to have a product to apply on their crops for weeds. In hemp, it's a physical, it's a manual labor. And depending on what type of weed, what region you're in, depends on how much that labor is going to cost. So with our technology, one of the first things we seen that was one of the biggest areas that we could basically bring relief, not only in how they dealt with it, but in cost. And doing something where normally the traditional way would be to walk each row by row, we do an aerial of the entire field, and we basically can circle the areas that are problematic immediately, and then ones you can deal with day two. And in doing that, we basically say row two, row three, row four, and the field labor basically attacks it like that.
So Derek, break it down on the different types of drones and the different types of services that are offered to hemp farmers through the Drone Farmers.
We do basically three types of drones. One drone is used to do the surveying, to collect the data, to find where your problems are, or to do a plant count, more of a utility type of survey. That's your survey drone. Then we have our sprayer, and we have two types of sprayers that have the ability to do an orchard mode, and one that's can apply product on basically clones about a week after they're planted. So with the two levels of sprayers, we can attack the organic kind of market, not only hemp. And then our third drone is a broadcast spreader, which we do cover crops for a lot of our hemp clients, but we can also spread anything that's pelletized. So we've done nitrogen pellets. We've done test programs, even spreading salt for de-icing and bait for grasshoppers. So the basic three drones are, we have our inspector, our sprayer, and our broadcast spreader.
You bring up an interesting point, which is organic versus conventional, which is, of course, very important to our food and our agriculture industry. And as I understand it right now, with the limited pesticide and herbicide applications for industrial hemp, most hemp grown in the United States is therefore organic, even though it may not be certified by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And that's given the, until relatively recently, the implementation of the IFR and other guidance from the USDA. Will you talk a little bit about the different certifications associated with growing industrial hemp, herbicides and pesticides, et cetera?
Yeah, it's probably one of the biggest areas that we take the most time with each client, based on what they're growing for and what type of certification they're growing under, and how their growing process has to be sustained. We carry products back up a little bit. We basically approach this with a proactive approach. So in doing that, with the three drones I just described, we create a program that also involves the product to be applied. So when you select one or two of our programs based on what level of organic farming you're doing, you can select the products that fit that, from soil nutrients to plant nutrients to your pesticides or your fungicides. So the two levels, basically, the way we have to deal with it is the ones that are on the highest level, we have to even clean our drones with the organic cleaner. And, you know, on their side, every component of that they use for organic farming has to be certified organic. So we carry OMRI, and we carry the Green Business Bureau certification, and we also do kosher. So the product lines we carry across three different products. If you're not at that highest level, we have an all-natural product line, from soil to plant nutrient to your herbicide and your pesticide.
And as we've talked about before on this podcast, there is going to likely be an impact on industrial hemp farming and the amount of acreage in the United States this year, given the spread of the coronavirus and the resulting economic downturn. However, that presents a lot of opportunities for innovators and particularly for drone technologies. What are you kind of thinking about? Are you seeing some opportunities for drone usage in other sectors at this time?
That's an hour conversation for all the sectors, but just to run them down: oil and gas, huge, mining, huge, construction is probably the largest, internationally, just because of how efficient and how quick, it replaces the traditional way of doing things. Like, just a quick example, for inventory, RFID tags are pretty much put on everything on a construction site. Traditionally, you drive a truck through the site to collect all our RFID tag data. We have sensors on some technology we've created. We're reading like 70 tags a second at 30 feet. So we could basically fly over the construction site 1/8 of the time and collect all of the inventory data. Just again, I told you it was an hour conversation, just on the other sectors. But that's that's just one of the things, a really cool, unique technology in mining has just been launched. And it's a drone that it's basically inside of a sphere. So you're able to throw it in manholes, things you would never, the drone would hit, the prop would hit, and it would be a loss of a drone. So it can do inspections, and it carries sensors for gas detection. So now we can send these in and not an actual person, and in crawl spaces and areas. So across each sector, there's something amazing out. I think the radon gas sensors are probably the most unique things launching now, and real-time gas mapping is one of the biggest innovations.
How about the fact that you can use a sprayer off of a drone? That sprayer can hold, what's the capacity on one of those sprayers?
The largest right now is 20 liters.
So in your application, you use that as a fertilizer or a nutrient sprayer, pesticide perhaps. But what other things could you put in it? During this pandemic, could you put a sanitizer in there? Could you sanitize locations on a large scale?
Yes, and if you guys YouTube this, you'll see the makers of the drones. The majority of the drones we use are made by a company called DJI, and they're a Chinese based company. During their highest level, DJI dedicated pretty much a majority of their fleet, and it's one of the primary tools or instruments used to combat. The way they sanitized the city, they basically gridded the city. They flew down roadways as well as over businesses, and these are with the 20 and the 16 liter sprayers. But it's all over the internet. So we've been approached, and we're hoping to work with Colorado, but we're definitely in line to work with some other states in sanitizing schools, because once schools resume, I think there's going to be, a new awareness and new protocol implemented, and especially in heavy traffic areas like our schools. So schools might be implementing a program where they sanitize the schools at the end of each school day. So we're hoping to create a very cost-effective way for public school systems to implement a way to sanitize not only interior, but exterior.
It's extremely interesting. And another sector that has come up with drones, and I'm thinking particularly about Amazon, and I've seen this in the headlines, using drones to deliver Amazon Prime goods, which brings up the idea of transportation. And this is going to have a legal component, because we've seen interstate transport of hemp become an issue in the last year or two. It relates a little bit to testing protocols and not being able, law enforcement struggling to tell the difference between hemp and marijuana. I'm wondering, what are the potentials for drone technologies to transport hemp? Is that ludicrous, or is there something there?
Oh, I mean, on the delivery side, I mean, it's just a weight issue. I mean, it's like it depends what we're delivering. If we're delivering seeds, if we're delivering, end product, oils, tincture. But as far as a drone mail dropping, I woke up with the idea this morning as far as for delivering test kits. People don't want the just cruise it right up. And the way you can legally do it right now, if we had a van and we had the van loaded up with test kits, we can pull up in the middle of a neighborhood and I can go drop them in everyone's yard legally. It's a line of sight. As long as you have line of sight of the drone, you can deliver right now. It's legal. It's not an illegal. It's just a weight issue.
So what do you mean by what's legal and what's not legal? When you are doing something in what you're saying, line of sight, you can put a piece of equipment out there and deliver something. But what if it's not line of sight? And especially in your applications as a drone farmer, providing ag services there, you're not going to see the drone all the time. You're going to cover vast acreage. How's that work? What's required?
Yeah, and it's probably the biggest thing, because, these were considered toys. Now they're used in all industries. And so it's probably the biggest component of our industry that's overlooked in the level of licensing you have to have. A, to provide a service with drones commercially, you have to have a commercial license. And to go through the process of obtaining a commercial license, you do a lot of the same, you have to do and study the same things a pilot who's basically going to get his pilot's license to fly a Cessna. It's just you're not physically in an aircraft. You're flying unmanned aircraft or unmanned air systems. So with that, in whatever sector you're in, you have to think of the things that are illegal for drones, and those are all of the things you have to obtain independent waivers for your company to operate when it would normally be an illegal process with that technology. So with the drone farmers, we've obtained a FAA attorney, and we've obtained our night waiver to fly at night, which is one of the key things our service does to trump our competition, which is crop dusters and helicopter electrostatic sprayers. They have to visually see to fly. Our drones are GPS and radar driven, so we have been granted waivers to fly our services and to perform our services at night. So each waiver that we want that isn't part of the normal operations of drones, you have to obtain an independent waiver from the FAA. So we've done that. We're obtaining a swarm so that we can fly four drones with one operator. This enables us to compete and be competitive in the industry. With our sprayers, one drone can spray 25 acres an hour. Four drones can spray 100 acres. So we basically can knock out a pivot in 3 hours. And so that makes us competitive. So we obtained a what we call a swarm waiver. So our last is to be able to fly an unmanned aircraft over 55 pounds. That puts you in a whole different other classification and a whole different level of waivers you have to get. So those are the crucial things for anyone considering using drones in any of the sectors, but especially ag. You want to be in compliance, and you don't want to have operators on your premises flying drones and there's an incident, because you'll be liable.
I was just going to ask you, if I'm a farmer, why do I care about the FAA registrations, et cetera?
Well, there's all the things that there's the things that are already directly related to. You need to know, is this a commercial licensed pilot? Does this pilot, if he's commercially licensed, he knows all of the zones that he's flying in, which is the various airspaces, so that you're in compliance with the FAA. Because if you're not in certain airspaces, you have to be granted clearance to fly in those spaces. And there's a protocol for that. You can fly in pretty much, you know, two miles next to an airport, or actually at the airport, if you follow the proper procedure and you're granted a waiver.
Well, Derek, I'm wondering, is drone farming only prevalent in the United States, or is this something we're seeing around the world?
It's new, and it's more prevalent around the world, because one of the uniquest things that using drones, you're not restricted to your terrain. You can grow on the side of a mountain. If it rains in that area, if it's a plot small enough. But yeah, that's one of the uniquest things that other countries have used, because you got to think, if it's much cheaper to buy two $25,000 drones, where you're $50,000 into, or that John Deere tractor that's $400,000 that does it. So that's where a lot of countries, it's a more affordable piece of equipment, even though it's advanced technology. It's kind of weird that we're an advanced country, but we're still using traditional technology. So this is basically just bringing in a zero carbon footprint, no emissions in your field. With our command center, which is our mobile barn, basically, it's solar powered. So when we're out there performing our services, it's just sun and water. We have a 300-gallon water tank in our truck, and we mix our product. So we can basically spray a pivot, and it's all a sustained system.
Well, and as we touched on before, we are expecting to see an impact on the acreage and the amount of hemp grown in the U.S. this year. However, have you seen any impact so far? Are you talking to farmers? Are they telling you, hey, I don't know if I'm going to be able to grow as much hemp this year or grow any hemp at all? I might have to fall back on my other staple crops, wheat, soy, corn, et cetera.
Yes. I mean, I'm not a 20-year farmer. I'm not a 10-year farmer. Grew up in Indiana. My Uncle George was a farmer. Closest thing I did for farming was buy that self-driven lawnmower. I was plowing through summer lawns, and you know, I had a surplus of money, and that was as close to AI farming I got. But being our third year, the phones, you know, it's a blessing. I wake up like with our current state and how many people are not working, it's been the opposite for us. It's literally Zoom sessions. We're selling not only in state but in other countries. It's time for a more efficient way that's going to bring a better ROI to them, and this is the technology that's doing it. When people look at drones, they know it's not going to be more expensive, and it's not going to be something that's going to reverse and go backwards. So for us this season, you know, every season has a trend. It's either, you know, everyone's doing CBD, now CBG. For this season, where the phone's blowing up is tri-crop. And as a business model, we charge less per acre, but it's more acreage. And I would say, on average, it's I'm not having conversations with less than 25 to 5,000 acres.
You know, social distancing is what we've seen kind of mandated in our cities. However, farming, that's a rural job. So maybe, Bob, you can speak to this as well, but life has to go on. That's been a message that we've touched on a couple of times during this podcast. And farming certainly has to go on. We even saw the Department of Homeland Security declare agriculture an essential industry. That's the only way we're going to get food for next year. So, you know, it's interesting hearing you talk about the conversations are going kind of in the other direction. You're not hearing that people aren't going to grow this year. You're actually kind of seeing that increase in interest. Bob, thoughts on that?
Talk about social distancing. I mean, farmers, you know, that's the definition of social distancing. You're looking at an industry that can sustain everything that's happening around us because it's not necessarily labor intensive upfront, particularly when you use technology and large-scale machinery. It's something that has to occur. Farmers' lives, their livelihood, their families are dependent on it. And again, you have to keep the ag supply chain moving. There's no question about it. You've got government support. You've got, in this case, the industrial hemp industry, which is extremely exciting. And even though a lot of farmers failed over the last 2 and 3 years or became increasingly irrelevant in terms of growing CBD-only crops, hemp in and of itself is something that is required. It's sustainable and necessary. And I think based on the recent USDA rules and the current pandemic, we're in a situation where the world requires reliable protein supply sources. And if you look at the protein content that comes out of any industrial hemp plant in terms of seeds, there is a market for protein. There are protein deficiencies worldwide. That situation will only decrease because of this. Then you put a couple other value adds onto that same crop, whether that's fiber, whether that's the interior of the plant, or whether that's the quote-unquote waste product of cannabinoids and terpenes. And that farmer just did really, really well and survived this pandemic and the economic downturn, but most importantly, filled 3 or 4 or 5 distinct industries with materials and raw goods to power it and to continue pushing things forward. That's why farming is so critical, and that's why, in particular, industrial hemp is so critical.
Yeah, and to add to that, I think that's another big shift. It's like if there's one thing that I think a lot of growers are realizing is what's going to be done indoors and what's going to be done outdoors. And for us, it's making sure everything, you know, we have a lot of innovation we're going to be releasing. Our biggest is the ability to identify a male, a herm, or a female. We're spinning our wheels to make that technology work for outdoors, and is like it's really kind of pointless because it's not going to be needed for outdoors. It's an indoor tool because all of that type of monitoring is going to be needed to be used indoor, and our accuracy with it and it being available for indoors is a now thing. Outdoors is there's too many variables, so there's just a lot of things that just make what's inevitable a fit for how we're approaching it. So we have a program for industrial growers, and we have our program for growers for cannabinoid production. And while it's still outdoors, we approach it the same for about the first month, and then the program starts to shift. And as you know, once the industrial plant gets to a certain level, it kind of can handle itself. So that's the biggest thing coming into this season that is really unique, because you're always looking for what's going to be the trend for this season. Is it a particular strain, a particular way to grow? And this year, it's like everyone's going industrial. So we're basically designing our systems for large acreage crop management and applying products on large acreage.
Oh, well, that's the future of domestic industrial hemp production right there, the difference between horticulture-style production and true industrial agriculture, which, as you said, the people you're talking to, hundreds, if not thousands of acres, as opposed to, you know, a 100-square-foot, 200-square-foot greenhouse. Derek, we're almost out of time here, but for any farmers who are out there who are hesitant to make the jump over to these kinds of new emerging technologies and innovative solutions for their farms, what would you say to them? What's your message?
I would say pick probably their most problematic weekly, daily issue and see what we have as a solution for that. Compare our numbers. The easiest way is, you know, a lot of people apply, say, 1 to 2 products on their crops at a time, and say $30 per product per acre. And then you use whatever instrument you're going to use to apply that, whether it's a crop duster, a helicopter, a backpack sprayer, or a tractor going through. We're cheaper, and we're more efficient. We fly 2 feet above the plant. There's zero drift, precision application doesn't exist with the other tools. We can plant count. It's not an averaging. For insurance claims and for insurance, now that, you know, you can take out insurance on your crop, we have a program for that. So a turnkey solution ends up being about 35% lower than their best price. And that's from soil analysis to harvest.
That's the future right there. Derek, thank you for coming on today, talking about all these issues. Very important.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Hoban Minutes special series on coronavirus and cannabis. You can head on over to Hoban.law for more information on this podcast or the Hoban Law Group. If you have any ideas for subjects that we should be covering or any questions you want to pose to Bob or myself, shoot us an email at media@hoban.law. And stay tuned for the next episode on this special series, Coronavirus and Cannabis.